Okay, so last two on the top of 43. He who prepares food for himself alone eats nothing but sin, for it is ordained that the food which remains after the performance of the sacrifices shall be the meal of virtuous men. In other words, whatever you eat is supposed to be offered, right? So that which is offered in sacrifice, that's the food for virtuous persons. And just cooking for yourself, that's then not considered good. Let him honor with the honey mixture, madhuparka, a king, an officiating priest, a snataka, the teacher, a son-in-law, a father-in-law, and a maternal uncle, if they come again after a full year has elapsed since the last visit. A king, so in other words, if they come more often, then it's not there. So if madhuparka is a kind of achman, that is considered, you know, along like with argya, you know, it's high grade. Reception. It's not a pleasant drink, as maybe some would say. It's honey, yogurt, I think, and ghee, and so that's the madhuparka achman. So it's a kind of achman that's purifying, because it's done by taking the ring and middle fingers and dipping it into the madhuparka, the other, and then throwing one drop in each of the cardinal directions, and then one into your mouth, and then afterwards doing achman. So it's not a drink; it's for purification. Just like argya is not a hand wash; it's for purification. It means it's all auspicious items is poured onto the hands that you sprinkle on your head, or they can sprinkle it for you, like that. A king and a kshatriya who come on the performance of a sacrifice must be honored with the honey mixture, but not if no sacrifice is being performed. That is a settled rule. Right? So if it's been a year since they've come, then you would offer the madhuparka. But if it's been less than a year, if you're doing a sacrifice, then it's still offered to them. Does that make sense? So that's the element. So even here, the element of the respect and all that is adjusted, so it makes it more natural, like that. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's all. It's just like any of those, anything of the 16 items is like that. You know, you wouldn't eat the clothes though, or something. But. Okay, then 8a, prasita, the shredder rites, offerings to the main. Okay, now this goes, basically almost for, you know, 1.5 pages, and this has been cut down, right? We saw before how many pages are there. So these elements means what's left here is stuff that's in consideration, of course, of a shraddha rite, but they're elements that are just common aspects of the culture, like that. I will fully declare what and how many Brahmins must be fed, on what occasion, who must be avoided, and on what kinds of food they shall dine. One must feed 2 Brahmins at the offering of the god, and 3 at the offerings of the mains, or 1 only on either occasion. Even a very wealthy man shall not be anxious to entertain a large company. Right, so you have this idea is that okay, they want to do something for their, you know, some departed person like that. So if you want to feed the Vaishnavas, then that nice. But if it's going to be part of the Shraddha rite, it all depends upon the quality of the food and the quality of the service and the quality of the person involved. So when you open it up for everybody to come, then there's not great service. So that aspect as the Shraddha rite means that's the feeding of the Brahmin. If you want to feed devotees and have that just be part of their pious credit, does that make sense? That's okay. But we have to be careful to understand it's the quality of service that's there. A large company destroys these 5 advantages. 1, the respectful treatment of the invited, right? Because there's so many people, no one gets taken care of necessarily properly. 2, the propriety of place and time, because the place should be really nice, but if there's a big crowd, you can't always, you know, the guy, you know, somebody's eating on the stairs, someone's eating, you know, so it's not, you've made it, can make a good arrangement. A place, okay, time, because then you have a particular time you want to do it, but there's so many people, so prasad just keeps going for many hours. So it's, you know, somebody's eating at 4 o'clock lunch, which should be eaten, you know, at 1 o'clock, so like this, you lose time. Purity, because then it's so many, you can't ensure that everything's properly done and pure, the place is pure, everything like that. And five, the selection of virtuous Brahmin guests. He therefore shall not seek to entertain a large company, right? That means for, like for this is for Shraddharite, right? Does that make sense? But if you're feeding Vaishnavas, you're having a birthday or things like that. But the consideration is there that, in other words, if it's like there's always that many people eating, so you want to sponsor that, that's fine. But if you want to do something for a benefit and therefore try to, the idea is the more people I feed, then the better it is, it's not the case. The less people you feed, the better quality of the service and the prasad, that's where you get more benefit. Oblations to the gods and manes must be presented by the givers to a kshatriya alone. What is given to such a worthy Brahmin yields great rewards, right? So kshatriya is an educated and cultured Brahmin, right? That's the... Some Brahmins are devoted to the pursuit of knowledge and others to the performance of austerities. Some to austerities and to the recitation of the Veda, and others to the performance of sacred rites. Oblations to the manes ought to be carefully presented to those devoted to knowledge, but offerings to the gods in accordance with the reason of the sacred law to men of all the four above mentioned cases. So here's another reason where it's saying you're not too worried about the Brahmin, meaning you're not too worried on whether it's just studying and teaching or you study teaching on austerities or sacrifice or these other things, because for the mains, then it should be those who are just devoted to studying and teaching, because that's considered the most pure occupation of a Brahmin. Does that make some sense? Right? So, you know, then those other things that he shouldn't be a carpenter also, then that's along with it, because studying and teaching is his occupation. It is his sadhana. So that's the best. Let him feed even one learned man at the sacrifice to the gods and one at the sacrifice to the manes. Thus he will gain a rich reward, not if he entertains many who are unacquainted with the Veda. Though a million of men unacquainted with the riks were to dine at a funeral sacrifice, yet a single man learned in the Veda who is satisfied with his entertainment is worth them all as far as the production of spiritual merit is concerned. So this is one to a million. So if you've fed a few hundred, and you know, it's still, you got a few hundred thousand to go, right, to get up to one. Food sacred to the manes or to the gods must be given to a man distinguished by sacred knowledge, for hands smeared with blood cannot be cleansed with blood, right? Macbeth figured that one out, right? The ignorant can't save you from ignorance. That's the example. It's like someone who has knowledge, they can save you, like that. For a rite sacred to the gods, he who knows the law will not make too close inquiries regarding an invited Brahmin. But when performs a sacrifice in honor of the manes, one must carefully examine the qualities of the guest. As a fire of dry grass is unable to consume the offerings and is quickly extinguished, even so it is with an unlearned Brahmin. Sacrificial food must not be given to him since it would be offered in ashes, right? So we're not talking about feeding devotees and this and that. We're talking specifically about a shraddha rite. The sacrifice procedures of worship. The sacrificer shall make the invited Brahmins who have duly performed their ablutions sit down on separate prepared seats on which blades of kusa grass have been placed, right? So it's not just a line or just something like that. Properly prepared seats are made. Having placed those blameless Brahmins on the seats, he shall honor them with fragrant garlands and perfumes. So it means sandalwood paste, like that. But carrying the vessels filled with food with both hands, the sacrificer himself shall gently place it before the Brahmins, right? With both hands, not one hand. Because one hand you might drop it, or one hand you might stick your fingers inside, or other things like that. You won't properly take care of the preparation. The malevolent Asuras forcibly snatch away that food which is brought without being held with both hands. Right? So in other words, everybody gets their opportunity to get something. Right? You know, just like if you eat when you can't see what you're eating, like in the dark, then whatever you ingest, the energy of it is taken by these subtle beings. That's their right. You get to digest it, but you don't get the energy. Like that, they get it. That's why you never eat when it's dark. You can't see what you eat. Yes?
When Arjuna was eating in the dark, it was also happening. When...
Yes, it was happening. But the point is they didn't want him to eat in the dark. One is because it's not proper, but two is because then he would figure out he can shoot. So the point is it would happen anyway. You know, so... Does that make sense? So then he could figure out is that seeing the object and being able to hit the object aren't connected necessarily. Yes?
For example, generally when we are offering the milk to the deities in the evening, when Baba is set to read Krishna book and drink the milk, but generally in many countries it's after sunset.
No, it's not after that. That is not that it's after dark. It's that you can't see what you're eating. It means it's dark, means there's no lights. You can't even see what it is you're eating. I don't mean dark meaning nighttime. Dark here means there's no light in the room, so you can't see what you're eating. You know? That's what we're talking about. Yes?
Maharaj, we are now discussing this Shraddha ceremony.
Yes. No, everybody has pitris, even the rakshasas and everything, they all have pitris. So don't worry, malechas and yavanas have pitris.
Yes. So what is their situation because Shraddha has not been performed?
Not good. Not good. If someone's performed the Shraddha rites, then yes. If no, then not. See, what Shraddha rite means this, is that you have where Yamaraj lives as the demigod, that's Pitri Loka, right? Then he has court, right? So at his court where he sees the living entities who are dead, right? That then, depending upon the soul he's seeing, is either nice or not nice. You're pious, it looks very nice. He looks nice. You're not pious, it looks a little scary. Right? So when people give a depiction of the hellish regions and all that, and who runs them is not nice, that means they're seeing it from a sinful perspective. Right? Because Pitri Loka is, that's where all the forefathers go. There's also a connection between there, a subtle connection between there and the moon. Right? So that's why I mentioned the enjoyer of the moon. Right? Does that make sense? So the moon planet and Pitri Loka, these are connected. Right? That's because the forefathers, their day and night is the full moon to the dark moon is their day, and the dark moon to the full moon is their night.
So if you study our family tradition,
good chance. So that's why putra, one who performs this properly, then you save them from that. Right? So if you do this, nice, this is the way you do it. If you don't, if you're absorbed in hearing and chanting and preaching and the devotional process, then they'll be taken care of. Right? But if one is, coming to the temple once a year on Janmashtami for prasad, then it might not work as well for them because there's a good chance you don't go back to Godhead in this life, so it's not necessarily going to benefit them until you do. Right? Does that make sense? So these subtle points, but from here we're learning certain elements of the culture, like here, how to deal with prasad, what is a qualified Brahmin, how do we deal with them? Does that make sense? So the point is the context may be within Shraddha, but here is all the details of how you deal with Prashad. Because the most, critical rules for dealing with the Prashad and feeding guests is in the Shraddha rite. So if you know that, then you know what are the standards in dealing with a high-grade guest. Does that make sense? So outside the Shraddha rite, these still things would be there. That's why they're left, because then we can understand and we know why we don't do these things, because these are uncultured. Because we'll always being the most expedient, get things done, can't carry five things at once and this and that. And, it's not appetizing that the guy's walking in with all this and trying to put it down and drops something on the floor and picks it up. It's kind of like, they do better than that at McDonald's, So it's kind of like, what you're saying? So the idea is to learn what is the standard. You're supposed to deal nicely and everything like that. Two hands are used, so it's not just everything's just what's the easiest and everything. Does that make sense? Right. So here, then if you just carry something with one hand, then that means the rakshasas, the yasuras, can take the benefit during the Shraddha rite. Like that. Let him, being pure and attentive, carefully place on the ground the seasoning for the rice, such as broths and pot herbs, sweet and sour milk and honey. Right. So here, when he's saying seasonings according to one's ability, means rice is your main thing. So the seasoning are all the vegetables and things that go with the rice. So when I was saying before, as you take care of a guest, with seasonings according to abilities, it means according what you can cook according to your, what is your position. Like that. That's a far thing, because you're dealing with Shastra, and then unless they let you, you don't find the verse again. Yeah, I'm not finding it. Oh, maybe it was that one. Yeah, here. Even to others, personal friends, and so forth, who have come to the house out of affection, he may give food garnished with seasoning according to his ability. So food means the grain, right? And then the garnished with seasoning means whatever you have to go along with it. So the rice is the food. And then the vegetables and dal, all that, that's the seasoning. Does that make sense? Yeah, because that's what you're doing. Like in India, come to my house for rice. It's not that you're only going to get rice, like that. If they're macrobiotics, yes. But if they're not, then you'll probably get something else. Right? Is that me? Okay. As well as various kinds of hard food which require mastication, and of soft food, roots, fruits, and fragrant drinks. Right? So all the various kinds of chewed, licked, sucked, and drunk. The four kinds of foodstuffs. Right? All this shall be presented to his guests, being pure and attentive. Successively invite them to partake of each dish, proclaiming its qualities, right? So you're inviting them to take and inspiring them, telling how nice it is, what it's made out of, what it's good for, all these things. Let him on no account drop a tear, become angry, or utter an untruth, nor let him touch the food with his foot or violently shake it. A tear sends the food to the pretas, anger to his enemies, a falsehood to the dogs, and contact with the foot to the rakshasas, a shaking to the sinners. Right? In other words, you get the thing and you're trying to figure out what it is, so you shake it. Don't shake it. You have to figure it out by looking at it. Like once in Mayapur, then there were so many preparations, and they were trying to figure out what there was to serve Prabhupada. So they're smelling it. And Prabhupada says smelling's for animals. That's how animals figure things out, is by smelling it. It says humans look at it. You should be able to look at the prep and tell what it is. So you don't smell it, you don't shake it, you know, you don't do all these kind of things. Whatever may please the Brahmins, let him give without grudging it. Let him recite stories from the Veda, the institutes of sacred law, legends, tales, Puranas, and Kilakas. Himself being delighted, let him give delight to the Brahmins. Cause them to partake gradually and slowly of each dish, and repeatedly invite them to eat by offering the food and praising its qualities. Have him addressed the question, "Have you dined well?" to his guests. Let him give water for sipping to them who are satisfied, and dismiss them after they have sipped water with the words, "Rest either here or at home." Sipping water means achman, means rinsing the mouth and all these, you know, cleaning after eating. So then afterwards, after they can either rest at his place or they can go home. Let him daily partake of the vignasa and daily eat amrita, ambrosia. But vignasa is what remains from the meal of Brahmin guests, and the remainder of a sacrifice is called amrita, right? In other words, we call this prasad and mahaprasad. Like that. Yes?
Which food is licked and sucked?
Licked and sucked.
Because it's in samsara prayers, it's there also.
Yeah, no, that's
one of the questions.
Okay, because food is the central feature. Do you understand chewed?
Maybe you can explain. I can understand.
Do you chew your food, or you just put it in your mouth and swallow or something? Your wife's been working on it for years, but still not quite. Okay. Chewed means it's solid, so you have to chew it, right? Then licked will means it's... not fully solid, but not fully liquid, right? Like sweet rice would be licked, you know, if it's a little thicker. Because you pick it up, it'll stick to your hand, and you lick it, right? Sucked means it's not as thin as drunk. Drunk means it's completely water, that you drink it like that. This is something in between where you have to catch it and to drink it. So if you don't know the Indian styles of eating, then suck may kind of be academic. But like in South India, you can put water on their plate and they can get it off the plate, and that's by sucked. Let's give an example in a Western context. Soup. That would be sucked. You put it on the spoon and then you suck it. You know what I'm saying? You're not supposed to stick the soup spoon in your mouth. You're supposed to, you know, we'll say sip. So sucked and sipped would be synonymous there. Because it's thicker than water, but it's not as thick as licked. You understand? So there should be solid foods, semi-solid foods, partial, you know, basically liquid foods, and then those things that you drink. You have that whole variety, then you know. So when you have, you know, how you say, very dry chapatis or extremely dry chachari, and nothing to drink, you know, and something, and maybe some pakoras, that's not exactly the four kinds of foodstuffs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Somebody think licked is only like ice cream.
That's also licked. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But that's the point, is it has that element, so then that has a particular thing of the flavor, but also the way, you know, the digestion, because you'll be putting, the amount of effort into it and all these things. It's so much greater than, you know, chewed, you just like that very quickly. You know, it take you a long time to get full with soup, right? But something solid, then. Does that make sense? So they have different effects. So. Is that okay? Hang on. Okay, thus all the ordinances relating to the five daily great sacrifices have been declared to you. Hear now the law for the manner of living fit for Brahmanas, right? So we found there's so many there, but those are standard also in how we would deal with Brahmins and serving prasad. So the other, what was it? What did we figure out? 7 pages or something? That's all stuff that, you know, if you really want to have a good time, then discourse 4. Wow, we're on the fourth chapter. Topic 9, the modes of gaining subsistence. It means how does a Brahmin maintain himself? What are the various methods? Having dwelt with a teacher during the first part of a man's life, a Brahmin shall live during the second quarter of his existence in his house after he has wedded a wife. Right, so then that, yeah. A Brahmin must seek a means of subsistence which either causes no or at least little pain to others and live by that except in times of distress. So in other words, what's going to cause the least amount of difficulty for others, that he's going to choose. Right? For the purpose of gaining bare necessities, let him accumulate property by following those irreproachable occupations which are prescribed for his caste without unduly fatiguing his body. Right, so how much he just needs by methods that are approved without wearing himself out. Right? Like Prabhupada mentions that 8 hours in a day for an occupation, that's, you know, a proper amount. More than that, then you start cutting into your sadhana and family time. Right? So you have to have a balance. Right? So you have, you know, 8 hours is connected with your varna and 16 with the ashram. So that would include your sadhana and your family interactions. So, okay. The six modes is, yeah.
Is the prasadam included in the time of these 8 hours? Or, you know, because we spend a lot of time taking care of the body also.
But that comes out of your 16. That's your sadhana, your lifestyle, the family, these kind of things.
But 8 hours is just occupational, right?
Yeah, that's your work, but within that, of course, is going to be, you know, your, how you say, eating of your sandwich, you know, going to the bathroom, you know, blowing your nose, you know, these kind of important things are, you know, whatever would naturally come within that 8 hours. You know, your power lunch, you know, your networking, you know, all these things like that. But, yes? For a Brahmin who's doing that kind of occupation, that's what he'd be doing, studying and teaching for 8 hours. You know, within that, that would work within that, you know, or whatever else he does. He'll study, teach, maybe does a yajna or does deity worship or stuff like that, if that's his occupation. See, there's a difference when he's doing the puja in the temple, so that's his service as a Brahmin. Then if he's doing his own deities at home, that's then sadhana. You understand? So basically the same thing, but it's just a matter of that. You know. But if he's managing, then he wouldn't manage more than 8 hours. Right? Then after that, you know, if he has a festival or something, of course, but as a regular thing, he should try to work it out that he gets everything done in that time. Not that he takes more time, though he should be more efficient in what he does. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's efficiency, it's not time. We will foolishly think it's time, but it's not, it's efficiency. The man who works at his business 8 hours, you know, and makes a few thousand, you know, and then there's someone who works for 8 hours and makes millions, and there's guys who works for 8 hours and gets billions. Like that. So it's the efficiency of what they're doing, not the volume. Like that. You know, men will tend to work more at work because they don't know how to function at home. So it's easier to be at work than it is at home. And then you can say, well, I'm doing this to get money for the home, so then they feel that they're off the hook. But it's not, you know. Or if family members demand more, then that means the man won't be there. He'll have to be making money. So then that's less time for them. So as long as they're purely economically based, then they may be appreciated. But if they're not, then there's always a problem. That's all in the 16.
Reading,
generally that would be within that 16. See, if you're a Brahmin, then that reading could be in your 8 because that's part of your duty, studying and teaching. But if let's say you're a temple manager or you're a business person or you're working for somebody, then that's 8 hours. There is that work.
It looks like it's a little overlapping in our situation in the temples. The temple president is not only a manager, but he's kind of has to study, has to know philosophy.
So that he works that all within these things. He has to balance it all and make it work. You have 24 hours and that's all you got. I mean, I've been trying to figure out how we could work out 36. That would be, you know, better. But somehow another 24 is all that we're given. You know, right in the beginning, they make it very clear that time means there's, you know, 30 dandas and that's it. I mean, 60 in a day, and so that's it. So he has to just work out, you know, what is his prominence? Is he a Brahmin who's doing, you know, these kind of things, or is he a Kshatriya, is he a Vaishya? I've seen all the temples like that. So the Brahminical generally is that the emphasis is more on the experience of the programs, you know, and that the, you know, the classes and prasad, just, you know, kind of more the devotional practices. Kshatriyas, it's more on the organization of those practices and everything running very well and good structured temple. And Vaishyas, then, is generally, those are things we do because we're devotees, but the real thing is going out on Sankirtan and collecting money. And then if you're good at it, then showing it by creating, you know, a nice temple that's got three altars and, you know, all this stuff. Nowadays, I don't think anybody worries about three altars, but in the 80s, that was the thing. You had to have a temple with three altars or you just, you know, it wasn't up to standard, you know. So that's generally where you see. I remember one temple, you had people were educated, you know, like that, you know, degrees in university and that. And they were complaining that in the temple they wouldn't allow them to read, you know, because that was a waste of time. You could be collecting money. And when I mention it to the president, he says, they should know, they should do all the reading before they join the temple. He says, when you join the temple, then there's just, you know, just the service for the temple. What's good for the temple? That's all there is. And in the temple president's mind, that was actually, you know, right and sincere. You know, it wasn't long later until he wasn't the president anymore, but, you know. But it was very interesting. They actually thought, I mean, I remember in our temple, I was sitting reading one time Nectar Devotion. They told me, no, the Nectar Devotion is telling you to do service. Now stop reading and do service, you know. So it's just, you know, okay. But Prabhupada's complaint was devotees don't read his books. You know, so the point is reading is part of the sadhana, you know. And in this case, if it's needed for, then that's part of your service. So you have to see how to balance what it is you need to do. You know, in other words, if you're the one that just does all the managing and all that, and you arrange that others are lecturing and teaching and all that, then the studying would be your own practice, and you'd manage. But if you're the ones that has to lecture and do these things and teach classes, then the studying is part of the occupation. Like that. Because for a Brahmin, his sadhana is his occupation. That's the thing. There's not so much difference. So you just have to see what are the values. Are the values knowledge? Or is the values, you know, how you say, protection or influence or organization? Or is your value economics? Then we can tell, you know, basically what the direction one's coming from. Yes?
Sometimes for the temple president, the values is following this guy.
But which is the main one that he functions it from? You know what I'm saying? If there's opportunity for all these, but you can only do one, which one do you choose? That's, you know, in this way you can kind of like limit it down. So the point is Brahmins and Kshatriyas, there's very minimal difference like that, because the basis in Shastra, basis what they know, especially when you're saying Rajarshi, then there's very minimal difference like that. Though there is that element of that organization and those things. But it's not that a Brahmin can't do it, like Chanakya. That was his field. He knew that, and so he can organize it. But that wasn't his prominence. His problem was is that the country wasn't being managed properly, so he couldn't perform his brahminical duties properly and run his school. So he reorganized the whole country so that it was peaceful enough that he could run his school. You know what I'm saying? So even though it's there, you can see them delaying the brahminical. Or because he was the prime minister, but he still lived in his own hut and went out begging to maintain himself. So he didn't take any maintenance from the king. Right? He had the position and served, you know, within that capacity, but he didn't take any maintenance. So then you can see the brahminical element. Yes?
One topic that has been up in European leaders meeting a couple of times is good wages for the sages, and this discussion.
I always have to come up with these nice names. Wages for the sages. Okay, so they're really worried about what to do for the guys that are full-time pujaris, the BBT people. No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That sages, so they want to count themselves as sages. But if they're administrators, they're not sages. Sages means Brahmins. Rajarshis means Kshatriyas who are like as good as Brahmins. So because it sounds good for the sages, but they should say wages for the temple leaders. You know, but it doesn't sound so good, because then it's like, oh, you know, like there, but you say, as I said, people who are doing full-time BBT work, you know, that's one thing, you know, full-time pujaris, full-time preachers, you know, like that, someone who's, you know, doing medical work or, you know, stuff. Then you could say, they're your sages. Because the others is generally most of those people, if you start quoting Shastra, they don't know what you're talking about and they say it's impractical, so they're not a sage. You know, sage has a particular meaning. Yeah. They could say sage, wages for devotees, you know, but it doesn't rhyme, so, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, they should work out what's there, but the point is it should be pointed out, it should be done from the point of Naishkarmya. Because the thing is it says here, it says, for the purpose of gaining bare necessities, let him accumulate property for following those irreproachable occupations which are prescribed for his caste without duly fatiguing his body. And if they say, well, the Kshatriya, so they can live, they don't need bare necessities, but a Kshatriya does not live off a temple. A Kshatriya would never do that. It would be below, it's undignified. Why would he take money from the Brahmins? Why would he live by a brahminical occupation? He's a Kshatriya. Arjuna never would. He's been offered many times gifts. He wouldn't take them. Right? Their point is we live as Kshatriyas live. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then one has to be very careful about that. So if you're functioning in a temple, which is a temple, so you're managing a temple, so you could say administration is a Kshatriya element, but technically the temple is Brahmins. So you're the Brahmin who has that element to administrate. But that doesn't mean that that has any difference in facility. It's one still a Brahmin. So Naishkarmya is the principle. And if one says no, but then nobody will be temple president, then close the temples. We don't need a temple that needs a bunch of money from a community because somebody wants to make a lifestyle out of it as a living. Let them go out and get an honest job. Then we'll see how brahminical or kshatriya they are, right? They'll be down, you know, pumping gas or working at this and that. Everyone talks big this, but let them go out and see what job they get. And it's generally something pretty shudra-y, like that. I know of very few who run their own businesses or, you know, stuff like that, or they themselves are, you know, actually teachers on some level other than teaching, you know, how you say art to some three-year-olds or something, you know. So it's very rare you see something else. When you drop it into the material sphere, most drop right down to just shudra jobs or normal. Even if they are brahminical, they go out and get a job. You know what I'm saying? And how much will they get paid? Not that much. So generally, we tend to, in these meetings, overrate ourselves. So the point is, this is not, well, if I was a karmi, I'd be getting this much. I kind of doubt it. Most devotees, if they were karmis, wouldn't be getting as much as they get as facilities from the temple. They wouldn't at all, realistically. Like Pragosh, he runs businesses, so he would have money. Ambarish, he would have money. You know, Gopal Bhatta, he would have money. You know? But whether anybody else, I kind of doubt it. You know? I'm sure Shiva Ramaj would do okay. Like that. Govinda Maharaj is clever. Indadu Namaj. You know, I mean, they can go out and generate money. So, but if they can't, they're not generating, they're expecting taxes, and they don't protect, so that means they're bureaucrats, so that means they're shudras, that means they go out and get a job. It's really straightforward. So the point is what can the temple afford? What kind of facilities are there that's minimal? And then one lives like that. If one's not willing to live at that, don't be the temple president. Because I'm sure there are devotees who would be willing to live like that. But then we're not seeing them in the administration, you know, kind of lineage. And so then we'll think, you know, this devotee, how could he manage and stuff like that? So, you know what I'm saying? So we have to be very careful that the sages for the wages aren't just, you know, the new boys club. You know, seeing we got rid of the old boys club, and we can't use the old boys club as the term. So, therefore, the new boys club. We should be very careful about that. You know what I'm saying? It should be fair, but it should be something the temple can take care of. Before, the temple president didn't get really any more than anybody else, right? Temple's there, prashad's there, you know, some place to stay is there. But, you know, how much do you go beyond that? You know what I'm saying? You know, so well, he can't do it because his wife has to, you know, have all this and that. Otherwise, he can't be the president. Then find another president. You know, that's easy, like that. Because the point is you're saying, well, he has to do it, but he can do it because you have to raise that much money. But if you had a different temple president, you wouldn't have to raise half that much money, and that means somebody else could easily do it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the president should be functioning on the platform of Naishkarmya. Otherwise, how does he lead a community? And if you're saying, no, he should get paid well, then he better be really, really good. He better be a manager that outside management places would actually like to have. And I don't know of many. So therefore, and if he was that good a manager, he'd get his own money. If he's that good, why doesn't he get his own? In other words, what the temple can take care of, but anything above that, get yourself. If you say, well, you know, you can't get yourself, but nobody else is getting. Right? Your temple devotees aren't going to India every year, so then why would you? Right? Especially now, you don't have to go for the meetings, right? They don't have the temple president's meeting after the GBC meeting, so hey, there's no need to go. So, you know what I'm saying? So all that should be considered. Before, the presidents would go regularly because their Sankirtan devotees could go because there was tons of money. They could do these things. But you can't say that, you know, the 80s were crazy and all the, you know, zonal acharya and that was all nonsense, but we designed for ourselves an 80s lifestyle. You know, that's not going to fly. You know, that's how Marie Antoinette lost her head. Right, she wanted to live at a lifestyle like Louis XIV, who, you know, created the French Empire. But Louis XVI was not a manager at all. He couldn't do zip. But she was still living as a lifestyle like Louis XIV. Didn't work so good. So if you can't generate it, you know, then what's the meaning? So if it's sages, that means Naishkarmya. And if you say, well, we got to take care of them because they're doing Naishkarmya, then make sure that everybody in the temple is taken care of nicely. Then that's fine. Then pay everybody more. But then make sure that you have the means to get it. Is that okay? You know, in other words, it has to be balanced. You have to look at it in a very complete way. Otherwise, then it just becomes focused on okay, well, he gets this, and because that, and then he'll work everything out, and because he's worked everything out, we don't have to work it out. You know? So that's not the approach. Is that okay? Yeah, yes.
Sorry, but I haven't heard this term Naishkarmya before.
Term Naishkarmya.
Yeah.
Have you heard Nishkam Karma Yoga?
Yeah.
So Naishkarmya is just a Nishkam Karma becomes Naishkarmya. No, Naishkarmya means one who does work without desire for fruit of result, like that. So Naishkarmya here would mean that it's selfless work, you're doing welfare work. It's, in other words, if you're joining the temple and you're being an officer in that, then you can expect to be paid like as if you were joining the Salvation Army or, you know, what's that big one where they go to other countries and... It also starts with an S. I know they train you and everything like that. I think it's an American thing.
Scientology?
No. That's a religion. This is a welfare group. I don't know. It's one of those, if you hear it, oh yeah, right. You know, but it's... So you're not going to get paid, really. It's just enough they'll take care of you. You're not going to die. But it's nothing special. So then that's all it is. So unless you have some method to get it yourself, then, but beyond that. So in other words, what your brahmacharis are getting basically is what you'll get, you know. And then there's more consideration for the wife. You know, just like if there's a brahmacharini ashram, they'd have more facilities than the brahmacharis. Right? Brahmacharis get no furniture. Women would get some furniture. You know, stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I heard from one of the workers has a doctorate in prana, you know?
Prana.
Prana. Written this.
Well, Pranava. Oh. I'm not sure.
And it's in Orbidus Research Center in Kolkata. They have a library.
Strange. I don't know.
He told that, because he works in the university, so he told that those Christians, pastors, or those work in the Christian universities, not the public universities, it's commonly accepted that they have to pay much, much lower wages,
mm-hmm.
because it's part of their mission.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the thing. Yeah. So that's the point. If he works like that, why wouldn't people want to give money to the temple? But if they see the give money to the temple and it only ends up in, you know, some fancy stuff, then no one's much interested. You know what I'm saying? So that's why. Because in other words, one shouldn't have to make rules about donations. If one has to make rules about donations, that means something's wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know, what would it mean if you had to have a rule? Okay, the brahmacharis have to take prasad in the temple, and they have to eat a full amount. What would that signify? There's something wrong. It means they don't want to eat there, and they don't want to eat very much. Why? Because it's not good or something. Or so if you have to make rules that people have to give donation and have to do this and all that, it means there's something wrong. It's not inspiring. There were no rules before, and there was tons of money. And now there's rules, still there's no money. Because administration doesn't... Donation is ashram. It's not varna. So we're making rules on varna that'll govern ashram. But... we can't do that. The rules are already made. Manu's already made them. So administration stays within administration. Right? Ashram's within ashram. So if the temple president is voluntarily living at, you know, a simpler lifestyle, then naturally others will be inspired. Because then if he's living in a simpler lifestyle, then there's more focus on the temple and the devotees and everything else. And so then people are inspired. They want to be part of that. Because people who have money, they can't do that. So they're impressed. They can't give the time that the temple devotees are. So what can they do to compensate their appreciation? They can give money. Because you either give time or you give money. They're synonymous. Right? So the point is, they have money, no time, they give money. You have time, no money, so then you give time. Yes? So therefore, that should be considered. It can't be nowhere the temple you have to pay. No, there are rules what the temple means also. Just like we see here is that just as strongly as the rules are on one side, you know, it's just as strongly as it's saying about how the woman should, you know, serve the family and stuff like that. On the other side, if she's not respected, the whole family goes to hell. So both of these sides, it will only take one side. That's the problem. It says, no, but the temples, they don't give. And it's, You know, we're just living by a normal middle-class lifestyle, but since where in history has a normal middle-class lifestyle been the standard for those who live in temples and monasteries? It's never been. You know, and when it was, that's when the reformers came along. You know what I'm saying? That's when they came. Like before 1400, you didn't have any problem like that because everybody lived the bare minimum. But once they had that power, and especially when the Pope wasn't a saintly person, he was an administrator. You know, in other words, he wasn't a sage. He was from the nobility or from the bourgeois. So in other words, they wanted power. Previous to that, then it was somebody whoever was the greatest kind of like Brahminical nature, they were the Pope. But when it was seen by the countries how much power the Pope had, then all these leaders wanted to be church officials. If you're a bishop, you can run a whole country. You can have a parallel government to the government because they're Christian and you're Christian, so therefore they can't complain. And I think it was, I can't remember what his name was, but the Bishop of France, he was more powerful than the French king. And he was... Yeah, so he was controlling France and he was trying to take over England. He was doing this whole thing, trying to kill the king and, you know, everything. It was wild. Like that.
It means that there is a place to maybe lower standard.
Lower standard? What does it mean, lower standard? Point is if everybody's living in, you know, two-bedroom apartments, and then you're demanding that the person who lives in a studio gives you 10% of his income, that's not going to fly. Point is if you're at the temple all day, what do you need a big house for? You know what I'm saying? Your morning program, your different things like that, you have some time for yourself, but the point is how do you maintain that place? It doesn't, you know. So they had this big house. I've gone to them, temple president's houses. They had this, you know, nice apartment. But, you know, there's nothing in it, and it doesn't look nice, and it's not nicely maintained because they can't do it. And so then the wife will want to take care, but that means she can't go to the temple program. And then so like this, so they should be living just what's simple, unless they can generate more themselves, and that's fine. The point is if you raise the standard of living, then that means it lowers how many people can be under the umbrella of the temple. So then that would mean, then if the quality of the people are so much greater, then it can still work as inspiring, but that's not what's happening. Because if you're simply going to inspire something by material facility, you know, no one's offering that great a facility. You know, and then even if you gave that much facility, who would be there to control that if they don't perform up to a certain level, then you'll kick them out. And so they'd be afraid of losing all that facility. You know what I'm saying? But that's what happens in these big companies. You know, you're a big executive, you know, in a company. You know, you stay at 5-star hotels, you fly first class, you know, you have all this facility, but if you don't perform, you're booted out. So you don't want to lose that. So here it is, you have that facility. Whether you manage the temple good or not, you'll still have the same facility. So what's the meaning? So better, it's simpler. Does that make sense? You know? So Facility is not a problem if the amount of service and all that is rendered, no one minds. You know, no one minds that a king lives opulently if he's protecting the people, they're safe, they're comfortable, they're satisfied. No one minds. Like that. Does that make sense? But if he has all that facility and he's not performing his duties, that's when people complain. So even if the temple does have a nice standard to taking care of their devotees, great. That means then they would, you know, it should be coming from that they value devotees rather than, you know, unless you have this facility, no, it'll stay in the temple. Then better to have an empty temple. You know, like that. So you just have to judge what is the balance. If the facilities, you know, are balanced by the amount of service, great. But if it's not, it's not worthwhile.
Generally, the more devotees in the temple is that the temple is the property of deities.
Yeah.
And devotees generally naturally wants to make a nice standard for the deities.
But that's the temple itself. What I'm talking about is the personal lifestyle of the grihastha in his own quarters. I'm not talking about the temple. The temple being opulent, no one's going to complain about that. So then let them go somewhere else. Let them become a Franciscan. Like that. You know, let them accept the vow of poverty. You know Franciscan monks? Francis of Assisi. So those monks, you have the monks and you have the laypersons, but they all accept a vow of poverty. So, you know, I mean, the monks keep nothing, and then the grihasthas, they keep as minimal as possible. Of course, they have a few loopholes, but I met one the other day, a lay Franciscan. You know what I'm saying? Then, you know, go join somewhere else. God's opulent, so what's the problem if there's some opulence? If it's nice for, like here, we make nice decorations. It's for everybody. The deities, it's everybody. It's not that somebody's sitting there and enjoying it. Brahmacharis are in here, won't let anyone come in. You can go look at the kitchen if you want. There's a picture of the deities on the wall. No, but where's here? This is our place. It's nice. We collected the money. We're going to enjoy it. No, I mean, that's... Why would people say that the temple itself, if the facilities are the deities and the temple room where everybody goes and they say, well, that's more opulent, then it's like, go join another movement, you know? Why bother us, you know? God is, you know, opulence. He is the Lord of opulence. Lakshmi is his wife. So what's the problem? No, it should all be poor. Says, great. So then, you know, are you walking out in the street whipping yourself with chains and stuff like that, and you got holes in your shoes? So if you're not doing that, then don't bother us. You know? Yes.
Then what's the proper reply when one says, well, you ask to donate money to feed poor, let's say for life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we can see that your temple is getting better and better. So if you are so concerned about feeding poor, so why don't you invest that money you invested in the temple for feeding poor?
Because once we fed the poor, then now that they have something in their stomach, now they can think about God consciousness. So. Therefore, we have a facility so they can come and be God conscious. That would be one thing. Two is, say, the recognized standard amongst NGOs who do welfare and feeding poor is if 10% maximum gets to the people they say they're going to feed, that's considered normal. So 90% goes into administration and all these other their facilities. That's normal. If you give 1 euro to UNICEF, 90 cents goes into their administration and 10 cents actually gets to Africa. But if you,
20% of
but if you,
money
That's there, but then you have your running fees. It takes a lot to run those. You know, to get those girls out there selling the cookies, it takes management. So that means if there's anything above that, then maybe you can keep 20% for increasing. But what we're saying is the administration gets you know that 90%. So you know, so then you're taking 20% of 10. So then 8% get there, and 2% you know you keep for that. So we have a lot better than that. So therefore, you know, you're getting more for your money feeding poor with us than you are with these others. You know, plus it costs more to feed poor around here. If you want us to feed poor in Africa, then you get more people there. But, you know, yes. Okay. Yeah, okay, that's another way of doing it. So it says it's two different things, donations for the temple and donations for the food. So your money goes to feeding the poor. These things are other people are giving donations for a place of worship.
If transparency is in place.
Yeah, of course. But the point is whether it is or not, it's none of their business, that guy's business. But the point, you know, that means if they're, that's amongst the leaders, that's their business about the transparency. But the common person, that's not theirs because they can't digest all these things anyway. So this thing is, if it's so important, no, tell them it's one of the things that's important to us. You know, also that worship and having facility for people to come together and like that. And so, you know, it's no place in the world. It means you have some place, you make it nice so then people are comfortable. Says you don't do that to your house. You don't make your house nice so you're comfortable. Said, you know, if you're so worried about the poor, why aren't you, you know, have just bare walls and floor? Why don't you just give all your money there? Why don't you live on the street also? You know, so I'm saying it's no one minds that you create a nice facility for a group of persons to get together to do something that's supposed to be, you know, a noble occupation. You know what I'm saying? And then, like what he's saying, you just split it. Your money goes to there. This other money comes from somewhere else. You know, Indians like temples. They give that. They build a temple. You don't like temples. You give money for food. That goes there. Is that okay? Okay. The six modes of subsistence. He may subsist by Ritta, truth, Amrita, ambrosia, or by Mrita, death, and by Pramrita, which causes many deaths, or even by the mode called Satyanrita, a mixture of truth and falsehood, but never by Svavrita, a dog's mode of life. Ritta shall be understood the gleaning of grains, amrita, what is given unasked, mrita, food obtained by begging. Agriculture is declared to be pramrita. Trade and money lending are satyanrita. Even by that one may subsist. Service is called svavriti. Therefore one should avoid it. Right? So rita means you're taking things that no one else wants. That's how you're maintaining themselves. So if you're out in the country, that's easier. When people harvest the fields and grains fall on the ground, and then, because the rule is you're not supposed to pick that up, because then there'll be people that come by and they collect the grains. Either they're Brahmins who are living by this as a mode of living, or they're poor people, or in the, you know, some way like this. So that's, or in a marketplace, after the market closes, there'll be grains on the ground, so you sweep them up and you collect them and then separate them and then like that. That's also another way of doing it. Is it open now, or the deity is open again now, or that's it? Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's Ritta. Means you don't beg, you just, what nobody wants, that's what you collect. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, that would be Ritta. The food that was, he didn't beg, he was begging before, so the food that was given to the cows and what the cows wouldn't eat, what was left, then he would take that. So that was Ritta. Amrita, ambrosia, means that which comes unasked. Just people come and give it to you, like that. But that means then it may come, it may not come, right? Rita, you can regularly go to collect these things. Begging, mrita, you regularly go, but amrita is just whatever comes, right? So generally it's not recommended like that. It's not considered the best, though it's higher. It's not considered the best because someone may not be able to tolerate that sometimes there's there and sometimes there's not. So generally only those that would be more advanced would live like that. Like the Python sadhu, that's amrita. Because Prahlad Maharaj asked him, you don't go beg, you don't have an occupation, you just lay here on the road, why are you so fat? He says, because when people bring me or don't bring me, it doesn't matter. So they brought me more, so I'm fat. And other times they don't bring me much and I'm thin. So it doesn't matter. So if it doesn't matter, then amrita is fine. Like that. Otherwise, then, plus there's no endeavor. So the amrita would only be used by those who would be very busy doing something else, therefore they don't keep any time for an occupation. Does that make sense? But if you're just sitting around doing nothing and then living by amrita, that wouldn't be recommended at all. That would be considered, wrong. Yes? Oh, okay.
Why is it called truth? Why does it say truth?
Truth, because then... it's just your substance is not dependent upon anyone else. It's just there's no interaction. There's nothing there that can cause karmic elements or anything like that. Does that kind of make sense? So mrita, death, is begging, because when you beg, they may deal with you nicely. They may insult you. Because they're giving you, you're begging, they consider them superior, and so they might not deal properly. So then begging is called death, mrita. But it makes you humble, therefore it's considered a very good occupation. Pramrita, what causes many deaths, so that's agriculture, right? Because when you do agriculture, so many living entities are killed, all the bugs and stuff like that, and worms and things like that, but it's just part of the process. So that's why, of it, as we saw before, means, or we'll see it also coming up, that for the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, if they're going to accept a Vaishya's way of life, generally they would accept trade as opposed to pramrita, because you kill less living entities. But for a Vaishya to do pramrita, that's fine, because that's within his duty. Just like a king to perform his duties has to kill criminals. So it's not a problem. Or has to wage war. If it's within your duties, then it's fine. Yes? They can do it. Yeah, they can do it. It means only swamrita is not a. Swavriti is not accepted, which means the mode of dog means getting a job and being paid. Like that. And then. Money and trade and money lending are satyanrita, which means half truth, half lie. Right? Because you can't make business if you're truthful. Because the people you're doing business with aren't truthful. Right? I give you an example. One devotee, he's like from these traditional Vaishya, families, every cell of his DNA is how to make money. They just know. They can look at anything and figure out how to make a profit from it. So he ran the shop, and he had a good friend who, was, you could say, would be, Brahminical by nature. But at the same time, as he dealt in economics and all that, so he was rightly so, was a real penny pincher, And so then he comes to the friend comes to the devotee's shop and wants to buy a cheddar. So then he says, okay, I want to buy this. Okay, great, I'll give it to you for this much. And he says, no, how much did it cost you? And he says, it cost me this much. But then there's the cost of it, Then there's the transportation. Then I have to pay the wages of all the people in the store and all that. So for me to break even, it would mean this much. And, you know, if you want to buy it, I can't not make a profit. I'm a Vaishya. There's no such thing as that. Because it's either you pay or I'll give it to you for free. But I'm not going to take a loss or just break even. That's a waste of time. So either you, what I'm offering you is I would sell it for this much, but I'm giving you a discount and selling it to you for this much. So either take it at that or take it for free. Everybody was saying, no, you're lying, you know, you like this, it would only cost this much. And he went through a whole thing, but he didn't actually know what he's talking about. So then it just creates, you can't tell the truth. If you told the truth is, yeah, I bought these potatoes for this much, cost me this much in transportation, I've done a markup of this much, so that's why I'm selling to you for this. People say, no, I want to... No, he's just being honest that I'm only making a 20% profit here, which is pretty standard, you know, in business, and you can't complain about that. And so, you know, that's all I'm asking. People won't believe it. So therefore, it's satyanrita. Half truth, half lie. You just have to be clever enough that you catch the lie part and, you know how to, you know, and how to know what is the truth part. So whenever, I don't know here, but if you're in markets where people bargain, you know, there is that element. Then when you ask them how much is the price, do they just say it? No. They go, for you, what's that you? They're looking at you. Okay, this guy, he's got this much money, he's got this, he's, you know, this stupid or this smart, and, you know, he'll value this much, or he's this attached to it or not. And then they'll go, it's 120 euros. You know, but the next guy will come, he'll say it's 500, and the next guy will come, he'll say it's 50. You know, if he goes, it's 120, he says, what do you mean? The market rate is 20, you know, 120, the market rate is 30. Okay, I'll give it to you for 35. You know, immediately comes down. But if he says 120, he says, oh, that's too much, you know, I won't give you less than 100, I won't give you more than 100. Okay, 110. Like that. So they go by what they think they can get in the transaction with you. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's that's that element. But if you bring it out, no, it actually costs this much, then immediately the price goes down. They don't try any more to bluff you, right? But if you didn't know the price and you say, oh, that's too much, I don't think it was worth more than 80, says, no, I want, you know, nothing less than 100 or 110, you know, he'll keep going with the bluff. But if you know you can go to the next store and buy it for 30, then you say, no, it's only worth 30. You know? Then he'll say, you know, 35. Or if he knows you're really serious, then he'll say, okay. Does that make sense? So that's satyanrita. You know, it means they try, you try. You know? Like that. That's why you have to know the market rates, otherwise you get cheated. Because most people, you know, if someone's working by half truth, half lie, then that's okay. But if it's more lie and less truth, then, you know, you can get cheated. Right? Is that okay? Okay. He may either possess enough to fill a granary or a store filling a grain jar, or he may collect what suffices for 3 days or make no provision for the morrow. Moreover, amongst these four Brahmana householders, each latter named must be considered more distinguished, though his virtue and through his virtue to have conquered the world more completely. So in other words, he who keeps a granary is of less standard than he who keeps only a store, means a jar for grain, you know, which means like this big, which means like around 100 kilos. And then someone who is only keeping enough for 3 days, then is better than that. But someone who doesn't keeps only what they require, that's considered the best. Right? So he'll get what he needs, and then he'll give the rest away in charity. And then be dependent upon the next day. So therefore, then it's has that element of the ritta to it, even though however you got it. Right? One of these follows six occupations. Another subsists by three, one by two, but the fourth lives by the Brahma Sutra. Right? In other words, the one who has a granary, he's living by all the occupations. Right? Otherwise, how does he get so much? right? The one who has a store, then he has three. He's combining them. He's begging, he's doing this, he's doing that, so he's getting more. Someone who has just enough for a few days is living by two, but the one who lives just enough for the day, he's living by one of them, right? So he gets that, what he needs. He's already given in charity this and that, and then if there's left over, then he'll give that away. So those who can live by that, you know, it works. That's the thing. Whatever you're supposed to get, you'll get it anyway. So if one understands that, then one is comfortable. But there's always that element of security. So there's that feeling, what if something, you know, like that. So then one wants to keep more. The point is even you have more, it doesn't mean you can access it when you need it. Right? That's the point. Is even you have it, it doesn't mean you can use it. So whatever you're supposed to be able to use, you will get. Even if you have nothing, you'll still have it. But it just takes a certain level of detachment to do it. That's why it says he conquers the world, right? Like that, because he is able to understand is that, you know, how he'll be taken care of, how the Lord takes care of, that's what he'll have, right? So this is for Brahmins, right? Kshatriya won't do that unless he's living in the forest as a vanaprastha, then he can do that, or as a brahmachari. But as a administrator, then he'll keep, why his granary will be bigger than anybody's, because he has to protect the whole country. So if there's a drought and the crops fail, then he has grains for the people. You know, or if there's a war, he has grains for his army. Like that. So that's why specifically it's meaning the brahmana or in your personal lifestyle. So the kshatriya for himself personally may keep little, but for his service, he'll keep a lot. Like that. Does that make sense? You want to say something?
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, in various occasions, he said that economical development is, in the modern sense, it's nonsense. It's not acceptable. And in many other places, he said that the devotee should completely depend on the Lord for his maintenance, and he should not worry about his maintenance.
Yes.
And I've heard in a lecture of one person said, this is very, very difficult to do.
But it doesn't mean it can't be done.
Yeah,
raising children is very, very difficult.
Yeah,
but people survive.
He says, like, he didn't say, like, this should be, and it is very, very difficult to do it. So I'm just thinking, you know, this should be a standard. Then.
It is the standard, but you get as close as you can to the standard. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you don't know what a standard is, how do you measure? So that's the idea, is that there has to be standards, and then you apply it to your specific situation at present. So, but at the same time, is you're comfortable with your situation at present, but you're progressive and know what the standard is, and you have a plan how to work towards that standard. Right? So that's where you have all these different seemingly conflicting points being made. This is the standard. At the same time, as you know, it has to be self-satisfaction. So you're not satisfied living at that standard, so you have to live at a different standard. So you're satisfied. But the same time is then you still have to be dependent, because even though you've worked, the result's still not up to you. So you still have to be dependent upon the Lord. So it's the same principle, though you're not dependent on but you're dependent on the process. You understand? Well, the Brahmin here is he's not making that endeavor, and whatever the Lord is providing, you know what I'm saying? Or he's making the minimal endeavor. He's sticking to one occupation. So therefore, whatever comes by that, and then whatever's excess, then he gives to others who need it. So then he's taken care of. Because point is, whatever you give away, you will get back. And because it's a sadhana, is he just giving to anyone? No, he's giving to qualified Brahmins. That means what he gets back will be even greater. So economically, he'll never be short. You know what I'm saying? So that's the standard. But the other person who feels he has to have, you know, a business or a job, so many different things, and, you know, have more facility, but still he has to be dependent upon the Lord for the result. So he can only make the endeavor, but the result, he still has to be dependent. So that anybody can do. So what they're talking about there is that if I'm doing this minimal thing and living at minimal facility, then I'm dependent upon the Lord. But if I can't live like that, then I will do something that will generate much more economic development, and I will understand and consider it that I'm doing it myself. But they miss the point. Is the living entity, no matter what is his position, he's still dependent upon the Lord. Because we can only make the endeavor, but the result is being carried out by the laws of nature. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's what's going to give you your result. So you can't claim that I did it. So you still have to understand that it's still by God's grace you're getting what you're getting. So you don't have the form of it, but you have the mentality. So the mentality, anyone can follow in any situation. That's how it's designed. The form of it, then there are more ideal forms and less ideal forms. But unless we can distinguish between the mentality and the form, then this won't be understood or be able to be practiced. Because the saying is very difficult. All we're saying is that to live so austere may be difficult, but to always remember the Lord is not difficult. Therefore, everybody can be dependent upon the Lord. That should have been what came out in the discussion. Does that make sense? So that anyone can do. Right? Even the richest man in the world, still, he makes his endeavor, but he can't say, well, otherwise, why is it they bought the stock? And they're intelligent. They know how it works. And they bought the stock, but why is it they sit there chewing their fingernails until the numbers come up on the board? You know, he made the deal, but it's until the money's been exchanged, then he's in anxiety. Why? Because he's not in control. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the results are, you bought the gift, and then you take it home to the wife, but you still don't, you're not quite sure what the response will be. You know what I'm saying? So once they're happy with it, then it's okay. So we're never in control of the result. We can only make the endeavor. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. So here, even there, that you're pleasing your wife by, you just went out and bought her some perfume, but it may be she already checked it out and didn't like it. And that's why she didn't have any. You thought, wow, she doesn't have this one. There's a reason she doesn't have that one. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know. Or it may be you just saw it and thought and like that, so you took it home and she was very happy. But you don't know what the result will be. You can only make the endeavor. So that's the point, is there's a field that's already there. You can't change that. You can make an endeavor in that field, right? But the result is not up to you. And the quality of the endeavor is based on how well you understand the field that's already there. So that means endeavor with knowledge is going to get you the best result, but the result coming is still not your control. Does that make sense? So that can be applied to anyone, anywhere, no matter how rich or poor, or whether they're working for somebody, or this means you can work all week and still not get paid. Right? Something went wrong. The manager of the company stole the, I don't know, you have them here, Provident Fund. You know, there's every month money's put aside for the retirement of the members of that. So there's a huge thing. And then they take that and invest that and make profit off of that, which doesn't go to the people, like whatever. But that's like this. And so sometimes they steal that. And so now the government has come in, you know, who deals with the taxes and has frozen all the accounts. You don't get paid. But you worked all week. You know, so it's still not up to you. That you're getting paid every week, great. But don't think it's because you did it. No, it was you were supposed to get it. That's why you got it. If you weren't supposed to get it, it doesn't matter what you do. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that these principles can apply to anyone, anywhere, at any time, as long as we see the principle. If we don't, then we'll get confused by the detail, and that's what happens. And then we think the detail doesn't work, so therefore it doesn't work, so therefore we throw it out. Right? But do we do that with the Western? No, because the idea is that it was speculative anyway, so we'll just keep speculating, it'll work out. Right? If I go out and I buy the Rexona deodorant, and I spray it on, and I walk out on the apartment down the street, and if by the end of the next block, if I'm by this corner, I'm not followed by 15 to 20 really good-looking girls, then that means deodorant's useless, right? isn't it? Because that's what the advertisement says. You know? So do I reject it? No. You know, I didn't sweat, so it's cool, you know? Okay, the girls would be nice, but hey, it didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? But in the Vedic, if it doesn't exactly act like that, in this situation, how I want it to and how I say it should, though I'm not in control of the result, and unless I've, according to the field, actually with knowledge of the field, performed the appropriate activity that would get the result, then if I don't get that, then according to my own whims, I'll say it's useless. So that's not how these things should be taken. Right? Is that okay? So we're giving the standard. What is the standard? You know, that's the thing. And then from that, we work towards it. Like that. Okay. He who maintains himself by picking up grains and ears of corn must always be intent on the performance of sacrifice. So here's the balance, because it's saying, he who gleans, then he must always be intent on performance of sacrifice. So here you wouldn't have someone who's doing something else. It means he has to be always absorbed in doing spiritual activities, if you're going to use this. So when he says that grains are ears of corn, here corn means grain, like that. So generally grain would mean rice, but corn can mean any grain. You know, it can mean wheat, this, that. And that's old term. Now corn means actually that particular kind of grain. But before, corn meant any grain. Because now they use wheat, but before wheat wasn't mainly used. I think a lot of times something else is like wheat. It's called spelt. You ever heard of it? That was used. That was more. But I think it's a heavier. It doesn't come out. It doesn't make such light things in that. Let him never, for the sake of subsistence, follow the ways of the world. Let him live the pure, straightforward, honest life of a brahmana. Right? So for making money, never follow the ways of the world like that. You know, he should follow his duties. And then from that, whatever he gets, that would be the proper thing to do. Because he follows the ways of the world, he'll get money, but then he loses his lifestyle. Because his lifestyle is what generates his actual upliftment. Money doesn't generate that. So he should always be careful, yes. In here, it's meaning, it's going to another context. Here, it's not being by these things, because whatever he does, the ways of the world, by cheating, lying, and doing other things, that's how people get ahead. You know, by not being considerate of others and, you know, stuff like that. That's how the ways of the world means they'll do whatever it takes, or they don't have the money, but they really want it, so they get it, and then they're in debt, and, you know, stuff like that. So the ways of the world means you are controlled by your, you know, material desire as opposed to your duty. Like that. He desires happiness must strive after a perfectly contented disposition and control himself. For happiness has contentment for its root. The root of unhappiness is the contrary. So if you want to be happy, you have to be contented or satisfied. Satisfaction is the root of happiness, because otherwise happiness will only be momentary. The basic definition of material happiness is removal of the pain, right? So there's something I want, so that's a pain. If I remove that pain by obtaining it, at that moment I'm happy. But once I've removed that pain, I'm not happy anymore, because it's mine. So there's nothing to gain from it. It's just one of my more possessions. Now what do I do for inspiration? I'll dream up another thing that I gotta have. Right? So when contentment is the basis, means what you have, you're satisfied. So therefore you're happy. So if you add to that anything, then there's more happiness. So contentment is the root of actual happiness. Otherwise, it's always changing. And so if one is not content, that will be the cause of misery. Unhappiness is because you want more and more. And if you're satisfied, then you're always happy. Yes.
You just said that if you add above that what you have, that you are more happy. But isn't it that, that then it becomes your new field?
Yeah, but your new field you're content with. So if contentment is the basis, as the field expands, you're content with it. But if you're not content, it doesn't matter how big the field is, you still want more. Right? Like that, I was just reading, I mean, what was it that, you know, it was back some time, I think Marco or something, president in Philippines, some, I don't know, 10 years back or something. When there was a revolution, when they took over the palace and kicked him out, they found in his wife's quarters 4,000 pairs of shoes. So that's lack of contentment. You know, I mean, what are you going to do with 4,000? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, that would be, you know, take you, if you wore one pair a day and never wore them again, it would take you like 12 years to wear through all, go through all the shoes. So even a lot, you couldn't do it. You know, because it's, you know, how do you ensure you get the occasion? Or what if your, you know, fat foot gets fatter? Strangely enough, feet don't really get fatter, you know, somehow or other. It's interesting. But so, you know, there's no contentment there, you know. And I just was on the plane and they were running something on fashion. There's some lady who's famous, I think, in the European fashion circles. I don't know who she is, but I don't know if she used to be a model or what. She wears wild stuff, but she has like 3,000 sets of shoes. No, I think 2,500 or something. She has a lot of shoes like that. So it's just, you know, where's the contentment? So the contentment is there, you're satisfied. Then if there's something you like, you can add to that. And then you're satisfied because now you have what you like. You know what I'm saying? So if contentment's the root, then happiness will be there and happiness can expand. But if contentment's not, the happiness will always be temporary. You'll always be endeavoring for it because whatever you get becomes part of the field. You're not satisfied with that. So then you have to get something more. That's the point. So here, making the point is that if you're content, then you'll notice that much of the time what you have is enough. You know, the reason we work so hard more is because you need more. It's just like, you know, it's like the guy has billions of dollars. Does he need that? You know, somehow or another, you know, is there something different about his pizza or something? You know, it's like, you know, they make it in a gold pan or something. It adds something or... they put gold leaf on the top. But even that, you wouldn't need to be a billionaire. I mean, what's different? His lifestyle technically is no different than anybody else who has less money than that. But somehow there's this need to make more and more. So it's unnecessary. So he's pointing out is for a saintly person or someone whose focus is on spiritual upliftment, don't get involved in that. If you're a business person, hey, do what you want. But if your purpose is spiritual upliftment, don't get involved in that. What comes with your natural occupation, sticking to one occupation, then that works. But if you need more, then take up 2, 3, 4, like that. Yes?
This is for all varnas, actually?
It's for everybody. That's why it was mentioned before. If a junior person takes up something that would be of a higher standard, let them do that. You know, if they're inspired to do it and they're doing it, let them do it. Because if they're not qualified, they'll stop. But at least they made an endeavor and they'll get the benefit for having made it. And if they do it and continue, great. So the point is these standards are there for everybody. But at the same time, as there is a limit. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas can't live by begging. You know, they wouldn't live by this. If they're brahmacharis, vanaprasas, sannyasis, then they can live by these different things. But otherwise, then the Pramrita, the Satyanrita, that's for the Vaishyas. Like that. The king's not going to use any of these. He's going to live by tax. Like that. The Shudra will live by Svavriti because he's assisting the others in what they do. Does that make sense? Right, the Brahmin went out begging and he got things like that. But those assistants in his house, he will pay them according to their work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
In a theoretical way, for
They will?
By which text they will live.
But where will they be Kshatriyas? You know what I'm saying? If they manage the temple, they're in the social position of the Kshatriya consideration, but it's a temple. So it's not a Kshatriya occupation. Like that. Tax means you're protecting the people. So that means you know, if you're working within the government, then you'll be like that. You know, so you work for the army or do something like that, then you could say officer in the army, you know, something like that, and you're working in that way, you know, then you could maybe say mayor or something, then like that. If you do that, that's your occupation and you're a devotee, then you're living in that way. So that's how you're living, is by tax. You know, because that's how you get paid. Right? You know. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here. So we got up to topic 10, the duties of a snatic. Like that. Okay. So now we get into more, what we'll see is the broader range of sadhana and other considerations. All very interesting. You know, part of personal behavior. So we'll take that up tomorrow. Today is Thursday. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi.